Welcome to the Empowered to Connect podcast, where we come together to discuss a healing-centered approach to engagement and well-being for ourselves, our families, and our community.
Hey y'all, Tana Ottinger here. I'm with Becca and Jesse, and we're excited to jump in today and talk about Self-Regulation 101. And basically in this 101 episode, we're going to kind of do a high-flying idea and overview about what is this whole thing called self-regulation. And we like these 101 episodes because we feel like it helps give our listeners and you all an opportunity just to kind of have a big picture vision of some of the things that we think are important here at Empowered to Connect. So what we're going to say at the top is we cannot in our episode say all there is to say about the idea of self, co, and external regulation, but we just kind of want to give you a snippet and then think about some really practical ways that this could help you as you support the kids and children in your lives. So let's jump in. And Becca or Jesse, would one of you mind kicking us off and just talk about what is this idea of regulation? And then maybe what's dysregulation?
Absolutely. So regulation basically is when you're at a balanced and steady state of your internal energy, your emotions, your thoughts, your physiological processes. So when everything is working efficiently and your body is doing well and your emotions are feeling, you know, they're right for the situation that you're in, the circumstance that you're in, that's when you're regulated. When you get dysregulated is when those things are out of balance or unsteady. So we just mentioned a lot of different things. And so it can be maybe you're dysregulated in your emotions. Your body's okay, but you get off kilter. Something comes up in your day and it takes you off guard. So you're emotionally dysregulated. Or maybe, okay, guys, it's 11 o'clock here in Memphis, Tennessee. In about 30 minutes, I'm going to be hungry. My body is dysregulated, out of balance. I need something to get back in balance, whether that's emotional, whether that's physical. A lot of times we talk about regulation, thinking about our sensory systems, the way that our body experiences touch and taste and feel and smell and those types of things. So regulated is balanced, it's a-okay, and then dysregulated is off balance.
Let me just add something that when I often talked about regulation when my kiddos were younger, I often was thinking about how they were ramped up. They were so ramped up, they were dysregulated, and we needed to calm down. But when we talk about regulation, actually, there's a whole range. And so you could be dysregulated in the run down sense. Things might not be just right in the sense that you need to actually ramp up in order to feel just right and to be regulated again. So when I wake up in the morning, I am dysregulated. I need to start talking. I need to have a cup of coffee. I need to start moving. That's what my body needs in order to become regulated. Also, if I get emotionally upset, maybe somebody cuts me off in traffic and I've got a teenager berating me on the side of me in the passenger seat, I might feel too ramped up. I need to calm down. So it's not just take a deep breath, now you're regulated. There are lots of different ways to become dysregulated across that range. Mm-hmm.
So Jesse, what you're talking about, we do call that like the regulation range. So I would think about that. You can think about it in a number of ways, right? You could, if you're a visual person, you could think about that as like an air, there's a flat line and that's green. There's an up arrow and that can be ramped up. There's a down arrow and that can be ramped down. And both of those arrows that are going up and down are states of dysregulation. Sometimes in our work, we use this thing called the engine plate, where you've got these zones of regulation, and it's literally looks like a speedometer on a car, and the green is kind of right in the middle, and that means you're good to go, and blue means you're run down, and red means you're amped up. Like, there's all different sorts of ways that we can gauge this idea. And so Becca, talk to us a little bit more about how this can be experienced really differently for different people, right? Like what might ramp me up might ramp you down. So yeah. Let's talk about sort of these differences that can happen across this range for different people.
Yeah, if you think about it, we really do each experience the world in a 100% unique way. And that, is, like I'm saying it, and that's like an easy sentence to say, but if you really stop and you really think about every person experiences the world in a unique way, what happens a lot of times is, you know, for me, a hug calms me down. So when I am agitated, amped up, I'm going to my husband and I'm going, hey, I need a hug. And he's giving me a hug. And that is making my body feel calm. However, for him, hugs kind of make him uncomfy. He's not like the most, it's not like his most favorite. So if I walk up to him and I give him a hug, he's actually going to feel agitated or alerted. Whereas it calms me down, it kind of like ramps him up a little bit. And so the same experience of a hug is regulating to me and it's dysregulating to him. Another way to think of it is it can calm you or alert you. Some of us, quiet music, gentle sounds are going to help us slow down at night. Others of us, that's going to agitate us and it's going to make us feel a totally different kind of way. So the way this comes out in real life is that we experience the world the way that we experience it. So if I take a deep calming breath and that helps me, then anytime I see someone agitated, I'm going to go, well, you need to take a deep calming breath. Well, that person might need to do jumping jacks to get regulated. They might need to push against the wall. They might need to do something totally different. So there's just not one way that we find calm or regulation. There's not just one way that we find alert or regulation. There's different ways that those are going to look for different ones of us. And it really just helps us not try to use a one size fits all approach when we're trying to help people in our lives find regulation or help ourselves find regulation. It's very, very personal and individual.
When we use those definitions of regulation and dysregulation, I'm just going to put a fine point on it and say that our definition of regulation is a balanced and steady state. And dysregulation is an imbalance and unsteady state. So that really is the difference right there, because to your point, it can be up or down, and it really is about the person's own internal experience. Jesse, what comes to mind for you in when we talk about that idea of like steady and unsteady?
Oh, I'm thinking about before bedtime for my kids, even now in their adolescence, but when they were young kids especially, you know, you might have that kids act tired in different ways. Yeah. They experience even their dysregulation in different ways. So I have a kiddo who will speed up the more tired she gets. And that is, I think if I were to like look under the hood, so to speak, that would be her body trying to alert herself enough to stay awake, because that's the demand of the moment, right? Like she's not being put to bed yet. And so she's speeding up. And there's a little, maybe some overcorrection there. So we're going from run down to ramped up and back and forth a lot. I'm thinking about, you know, if I've got somebody that seems like they need to calm down, they actually might need some alerting instead. So the way that you think about, like the way that Becca was saying, it's not always just take a deep breath or give a hug or listen to calming music. Sometimes even if somebody's ramped up, what they might actually need is some input and some stimulation and some alerting in order to get that body back down to the state it needs to be in. It really just depends on the individual and kind of their state of dysregulation and the system it's happening in.
So what's coming to mind for me is I'm thinking about how as parents and caregivers, what we really want, if we're really honest about it, is we want kids to be in a balanced, regulated state all the time. Yeah. And that means that we want, I mean, there can be a million ways that we're trying to communicate this or negotiate this or demand this or desire this as parents and caregivers. But I want us to talk about why do we get dysregulated and how do we learn how to self-regulate? Because really that's what parents and caregivers would love, would be for children, teenagers, maybe each other, to have the ability to completely and totally get back to a regulated state on their own. But we know that's not reality, because even actually the examples we've all just given, something more was going on than your ability to like take two deep breaths and pull yourself together. So, you know, what about when deep breaths aren't enough? Like what's happening there? So let's talk about the process by which we as humans even learn how to get to a place of regulation on our own. So first we start where, Jesse, talk to us about just from a child development perspective, what's happening.
Sure. In infancy. And, you know, I do want to say, Tana, we would desire for our own adult bodies to experience a state of regulation 24/7.
Yeah. And right.
We want that for our kids. I mean, partly I want that for my kids so that I also am experiencing right. regulation,
right?
Because what a lot of us are feeling is it's hard to stay regulated when our kids are dysregulated.
Yeah, that's right.
But we've got to go back to where it starts. In infancy, that the whole experience of being an infant is going from a state of regulation to dysregulation over and over again. Think about that's pretty much all a baby does in that first 6 months of life is experience, you know, I'm hungry, I need my diaper changed, I'm sleepy, those basic needs of an infant. And they go from that state of regulation to dysregulation. And what do? They express their need, they cry, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll experience when a kid in infancy is experiencing dysregulation because they make it clear. Usually, right? You will hear it from their little tiny lungs. And when that is happening, it's the grown-up's job, the caregiver's job to bring that child back to a state of regulation, right? You're going to feed that kiddo. You're going to change that kiddo's diaper. You're going to rock that baby to sleep. You're going to soothe it in some type of way that allows that baby to experience regulation again. That baby is doing nothing for itself to experience regulation. The adult is doing 100% of the work. And that is how external regulation happens. We have to be able to experience that in our lives in order to move to any other stage that eventually leads to self-regulation.
That's right, Jesse. So what you're talking about right there is what we would say, like that is external regulation. Right? There's something externally happening in order for any regulation to be found. So over time, that moves into something else that we sort of call co-regulation. So we go from external regulation to this idea of co-regulation. Becca, can you talk us through that a little bit?
Yeah. Whereas with the baby, the adult is feeding, they're doing all the work. Co-regulation is the baby's gotten a little bigger, a little bit more life has happened, and they can put the food in their mouth. They can be part of that process of regulation. So emotionally, a baby cries and you're rocking them, you're doing all the work. But as you get older, you're co-regulating with an adult. When you find that dysregulated state together, you're finding regulation. So the adult is offering support, or they're offering physical nourishment, or they're offering emotional felt safety or presence. They're offering something, and they're together finding that regulation for the kiddo. And that experience has to happen millions, thousands, hundreds of thousands, lots and lots and lots and lots of times as the kiddo develops that idea of, okay, my body can get out of whack and I can get back in balance. My emotions can get, discombobulated and I can get back in balance. And as humans, we experience this dysregulation, lots of times every single day. We just do. And we're helping our kiddos develop that idea that we can find our balance. We can get back in balance together.
What's coming to mind is if we just pull through this through line of food, let's just use that as like a really practical application example across these different stages. So when you are completely reliant on external regulation, to your point, Jesse, you cry and like you can do absolutely nothing but cry and hope that the person that's bigger and around you can identify that cry as hunger. And then food comes. When you get a little older and we're in more of this co-regulation, this is when the kiddo might go over to the pantry and hit on the door or start trying to open their refrigerator. Or I remember when some of our older kids were little, we would start teaching them sign language before they could even talk. So they might have the sign language for hungry, like wanting food, or they're starting to find their words, or they're able to ask for milk, like any kind of ability to begin to identify an internal sense of dysregulation and express some sort of participation in getting the need met, maybe other than just simply laying there and hoping the food comes. There's a lot of other things we could think about beyond food.
Right.
I had a little picture you were when you were talking about a kiddo maybe on a playground and they fall and scratch their knee and they have an owie. And they run over for a hug or a Band-Aid or a love or a wet cloth. They're out of regulation. They got hurt and they're seeking proximity and care from an adult to get that need met. Well, that happens all the way through childhood and adolescence. Give me a few examples of this co-regulation idea through some other ages and stages, maybe middle school, adolescence. Tell me about how that might look during those ages and stages.
Let's say middle school, the kiddo comes home and they're slamming doors and they're being disrespectful and they're, you know, sassy and, you know, just snapping at their family members. When was the last time that kid ate? You know, if you're going to pull the food through line, like that kid may not be quite to the level of knowing like how long they can go without food before they need to feed themselves again. They might need a little help in that area. And so co-regulating might look like, hey, bud, here's a snack. Or, you know, like picking them up in the car from school with a snack. Hey, brought you a snack. Or, hey, looks like you might be hungry. Can I make you a snack? Or head on over to the pantry, you know, where you know the snacks are. That's co-regulation for a middle schooler. Or maybe that first breakup and there's teariness and there's rage and there's all kinds of emotions happening and we're emotionally dysregulated and being able to show instrumental care, but also emotional nurturing care to sit with or beside or go on a walk and be like, man, that's so hard. Tell me what is breaking your heart about this and just listening and maybe rubbing a hand on a back. If you're someone like Becca, that physical presence and touch is meaningful to you, or, you know, by then, hopefully we have learned a little bit about our middle schooler or a high schooler to know what are those things that soothe them. Hey, let's play some music that you love and go get some ice cream. Hey, let's, you know, whatever, what are those things that soothe us? I'm even thinking about watching a scary movie. You know, maybe it's your middle schooler or high schooler that's watched their first horror film and they didn't realize it was going to affect them that way.
Yeah.
And they're feeling jittery and they're having a hard time falling asleep. What does that look like to co-regulate in that stage? Maybe it means like, hey, you want to have a sleepover? You can come sleep in our room tonight. I won't tell. Maybe it means, hey, you know, like, let me sit with you in your room and we're going to listen to this funny podcast before you go to bed. I heard this the other day. You're going to think it's so funny, and help and distract their brain so that they can calm down. Those would be some ways that we can help our older kiddos co-regulate as they're learning how to do this for themselves.
I think about some of those big anxieties that come up whenever you're getting older, like a big test, and co-regulating might look like helping make flashcards and study, or helping them set it aside and do something, go jump on the trampoline instead. Or it might look like just reassuring and encouraging, like, no matter how the test goes, I love you. Like, it could look, the co-regulation could look different depending on what that kid needs. But I think there's a lot of needs that pop up as dysregulation. And some of it's about worrying about something, or maybe with your older kiddo, it's conflict. Maybe it's with a sibling, or maybe it's with a peer, or like you said, a significant other. And so we get real dysregulated, real bent out of shape. Even as adults, we get really bent out of shape when things don't go well in relationships. Yep. And so we're often dysregulated and we need somebody who can offer that reassurance, who can offer that. Sometimes it's advice. Sometimes it's, you know, practicing outside the moment, role-playing, talking through things. Other times it's just a gentle, just some love, you know, it's just some love and care.
you know, even for our kids to see how we do this ourselves when they are with us. Even really young, toddlers and preschoolers are watching how we handle our own selves. When they see mom or dad get upset emotionally, or, you know, hurt themselves on accident, or start to experience hunger or fatigue, even just narrating what we're experiencing and how we're going to seek regulation is great modeling for our kids. I think, and especially as your kid gets older, being able to be like, hey, I'm so sorry, I just snapped at you, you know, you're driving in the car. You're like, I think I'm actually hungry. Can we stop off at Starbucks? I'm going to get something to drink. You know, I'm going to get a little caffeine and with some protein in it, mm-hmm. you know?
Could I say another one that it's not an older kid example, but because our baby was born a little early, she couldn't regulate her body temperature for a long time. They had to use a heat lamp to help her stay warm enough. And so I take her temperature a lot more than I ever thought I would with a newborn at home, because I'm wondering, is she too hot? Is she too cold? How are we doing? Do we need to turn this on, turn this off, adjust this, change the clothes? And so like regulation also is our like temperature. It's how we're, you know, it's how we're doing. And so just thinking about, you know, as she grows, there's going to be a day where it's not me putting a blanket on her, but it's, hey, don't forget your jacket. And then there's going to be a day where it's, all right, you're going to choose to go to school in flip-flops in the winter. Your feet are going to be pretty cold and you're going to have to figure that out. So it's that, like, it's those physical things as along with the emotional. But when you were talking, Jesse, for some reason, I was just thinking, man, I never thought I'd be so obsessed with someone's body temperature as I have been.
Right. I mean, that's it. So if you can think about it as it's totally external, then it becomes like co-regulation actually most of the time, because I actually think we're going to move into self-regulation. But in reality, even as grown adults and matured individuals, we are very often reaching in to other people to help us co-regulate.
That's right.
But we're just able to completely identify it on our own and maybe seek that co-regulation completely, you know, on our own. Therefore, we could call it self-regulation. But in reality, self-regulation is still actually negotiating a lot of co-regulation. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about that idea of self-regulation. Y'all been hitting on it, but how does that look and what does that look like to be able to completely self-regulate?
Well, we have to be able to experience external regulation and co-regulation in our lives many, 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 many times, much more than you would even think, before we can begin to initiate self-regulation. I love that you use that word, Tana, initiate, because I think that is actually what's making it classified as self-regulation. The awareness of your own dysregulation, even if you don't even know quite what to call it or why you aren't feeling quite right, to be able to start to seek that out is what we would consider self-regulation. And we have an animate on our YouTube channel, and Tana will tell you a little bit more about that at the end of this episode. But I'm thinking there's a little graphic in the animate of this little guy with a backpack on and seeking self-regulation. And what he's doing is thinking of a time when a caregiver co-regulated with him. And so I'm thinking about when you see people standing together in a long time. I was in a worship service at church yesterday, and I'm thinking about, you look around, there's a lot of people swaying. And you know what? When their caregivers held them as babies, they probably swayed with them. And it makes me wonder, like, is that why I sway when I stand for a long time? I don't know. Maybe it's like kind of a way that I'm not even thinking about self-regulating. It's going to be kind of drawing upon those experiences that have been added to our foundation to be able to know what to do for ourselves, to soothe ourselves. Oh, I remember my mom always played my favorite music. I'm going to turn on my favorite music. We may not even explicitly be drawing these memories. It's locked in there implicitly. We just know what to do because it was shown to us and for us for so long.
I think whenever you hear people talk about self-regulation in the world, kind of what they mean is that we want kids to be able to solve their problems, meet their needs, just get through life pretty independently. And we want it kind of as soon as possible. Like, as soon as possible, could you just figure that out by yourself? Like, could you just
I would
not?
Like to parent this child without parenting this child, please. Right.
Like, I mean, if we're just being honest, whenever we hear it kind of in it, I think a lot of times when people talk about self-regulation, it's kind of a big focus on independence and a big focus on do-it-yourself kind of mentality. But I think the research that we cling to, the attachment science that we know, what we've seen to be true is that, guess what? We need people. As adults, we need people. As kids, we need people. We need support. We need encouragement. We need guidance. And so I think it's just a reminder that when we pull kiddos close, actually that's going to help give them the independence, the wings to fly out of the nest better than if we just kick them out of the nest too soon. And I think our culture wants to kick us out of the nest pretty quickly and early in a lot of ways.
For sure. You know, you hear people talk about self-soothing and teaching their baby to self-soothe. You can't learn how to self-soothe until you have been soothed. And I'm thinking about, in adolescence, especially, and even into adulthood, the grown or growing people that we know that are using maladaptive or adaptive behaviors to regulate themselves. And we may not even see it that way, but they're soothing through using drugs and alcohol. They're soothing through fighting because it's alerting and it's providing some input that they need. They're soothing through maybe sexual behaviors that provide the kind of input they need, both emotionally and physically. So there are a lot of behaviors that we would consider risky, or we would not want our kids soothing themselves in those ways, but unless they're shown how to soothe themselves, they're going to figure it out somehow, and it may not be the way that we want them to.
For sure.
I think what you're bringing up is really interesting, Jesse. I'm thinking about this idea of coping strategies, right?
Like, exactly.
Maybe our language uses the word coping strategies, and maybe if we frame it up in this conversation, we could say, hey, they're literally trying to regulate. And it could be in a season, it could be with big emotions, it could be with overwhelm, like whatever is happening is causing them internal dysregulation, and they have strategies that they've reached to try to find some sort of way to cope and or reach, you know, some operating balance that's good enough for them to sort of get through this difficult season or time. And so I think that's really important for us to think about what happens for kiddos, and what would y'all want us to be thinking about for kiddos that have maybe missed that season of, you know, repetitive over and over externalized and co-regulation. How do we repair and recover from that? What are some of the signs that we might see? And then how could we offer support?
I'll kick us off. And then Becca, I'd love for you to fill in a little bit. I'm thinking this goes hand in hand with attachment science and what we know about the cycle of unmet needs, that if a kiddo has experienced unmet needs over and over and over, then it's going to take a long, long time to kind of catch up and teach that kid that they can trust an adult to meet their needs. They can trust that caregiver. It's kind of the same way if you're coming in a little later and a child hasn't experienced external regulation or co-regulation, and they're maybe a little bit older and have missed out on some of that, you're going to want to try and recapture some of that. You may be externally regulating a teenager, and it may feel ridiculous to you. It may feel backwards, but if that teenager didn't receive that type of care and regulation when they were an infant, they're going to have to recapture it somehow. They're going to have to experience that experience of someone soothing you. And soothing can look all different kinds of ways. It doesn't just have to be rocking them in your arms. Mm-hmm. There are so many different ways we can soothe our bodies or alert our bodies. I'm saying soothing. You hear me, like, you know, kind of erring towards that side of having to bring someone down. There are lots of different ways to alert people as well. And so doing that for a kiddo that's missed it is going to be really important, and maybe doing it for longer than we think we need to.
And it's hard. So whenever we don't experience that from early on, we find other ways. And what we talk about a lot is that when those needs are unmet, it can lead to apathy, anxiety, or rage. So what you might be seeing is apathy. They don't seem like they need anything. Anxiety, there's a bottomless pit of needs. Rage, I want to help you, but you don't want me to help you. And so as an adult, being able to see it for what it is, see that as, you know, the result of unmet needs, and then find creative ways. Some kids who don't experience co-regulation do become hyper-independent, and it's going to take time and creativity and grace and patience to find ways to meet their needs collaboratively, and to for them to feel safe and vulnerable enough with you to let you co-regulate with them. For other kiddos, it could be the extreme clinginess. You know, they're really, really wanting to stick really, really close to you, and you're wondering, is it ever going to end? Are they ever going to sleep in their bed by themselves? Are they ever going to be able to walk across the street without holding my hand? Are they ever going to be able to solve a conflict without needing me to walk through it step by step? So it can look lots of ways. The heart of a caregiver is exactly what Jesse said. Let's give them those countless co-regulating experiences. Let's meet those needs abundantly to help fill and build and help them grow that. I think one of the most encouraging things that we talk about all the time is just the amazing capacity that the human mind has to heal, that the human soul has for healing and restoration. So there is hope. It is possible along the way.
I'm thinking of a couple more things. Bringing awareness to dysregulation and mm-hmm. regulation can be important for older kids because they have the capacity to learn that cognitively. And so marking those moments of like, oh, it, you know, not just modeling it, but also saying it seems like you might be hungry, or this is what hungry feels like,
yes.
or this is what anxious feels like, or this is what being too hot and sweaty feels like, or this is what feeling tired feels like. It not in a patronizing way or a condescending way, but to guide our kids along with like a little bit of growing that interoception and what it looks like and means for them to feel those feelings in their body and their minds and spirits, and then know what to do next mm-hmm. with that feeling. I think marking that for older kids is important. And just being able to help them along the way with that.
I love that so much, Jesse, because I think what you're doing is empowering them to be able to feel, sense, and negotiate for themselves as they continue to grow. And one more thing I want us to talk about here for just a few minutes is this idea of when we get out of balance, and, you know, AKA dysregulated, it's most of the time involuntary. I mean, maybe we could actually say it's always involuntary, like something you might have done something that then made you dysregulated. So in that way, you kind of did something that dysregulated you.
I mean, our bodies and minds and emotions are going to seek regulation on their own. Like they're just wired to do that. Right. So if our kids could be regulated, they would be, their bodies would be. Because that's what their body wants.
So when we're experiencing dysregulation, I think if we could sort of maybe make a mental shift here, and it needs to be a non-judgmental observation, right? Like being dysregulated is not bad. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad kid is a dysregulated kid. Like we need to sort of put some of that language aside. So I want us to think about dysregulation as involuntary. And then I want us to flip the mirror and look at how that means it's involuntary when it happens to us as well. So how can we offer ourselves like compassionate awareness to dysregulation? So let's flip the page a little bit and talk just a minute about compassionate caregiving and parenting when we are in a place of dysregulation. And We didn't do it. It's happening to us. It's our body's automatic, involuntary response to alert us or calm us or dysregulate us to some sort of stress response, et cetera, et cetera. So let's talk just a few minutes about what it means to seek self-regulation or co-regulation as parents and caregivers as we support kids who are dysregulated.
I think we can even extend that non-judgmentalism to dysregulation in general. It's a normal part of life. I know as a parent, I have thought judgmentally about dysregulation in the past of like, this is bad, you're dysregulated, mm-hmm. whether it was exactly. my own self
right.
or my own kiddo. But dysregulation is normal. Like, it's just part of living a normal life. Regulation's right. good. Dysregulation's good. It is happening. it just is. So I think when we offer ourselves compassion for that, first of all, like learning what does actually soothe me as a caregiver. Some of us might need to go back and explore, did we even receive that ourselves, right? How were we externally regulated as babies? Mm-hmm. How did our caregivers co-regulate with us? I think that is so important to just explore and then bring that forward of like, okay, well then how do I see those patterns happening for me today? How am I soothing myself? How am I self-regulating in those moments when I'm needing to be alerted or soothed?
It starts with us. So it's easier to focus on what it looks like in a kid, what it looks like mm-hmm. to try to, you know, we're trying to, like you said, it's like a lot of times we're trying to prevent dysregulation instead of just acknowledge that it's part of life. But also, lots of us are living in a state of like constant dysregulation or often dysregulation. And we're not always pausing to think about how can I get regulated and what am I doing? For me, a lot of times it is those physical, I'm not sleeping, I'm not eating healthy, I'm not moving my body. And I notice I'm more agitated, and then it's coming out emotionally. But for me, a lot of times it starts with those physical things. And then you do need to think about the emotional. Do you feel supported? Do you feel loved? Do you feel cared for? And then in the moments when you become dysregulated, because it's a part of normal life, knowing yourself, hey, for me, if I grab a drink of water, that really does help me kind of pause and acknowledge I'm dysregulated, whether that's emotional or physical. And now what am I going to do to meet my needs so that I can empower my kiddo, support my kiddo? But it really, lots of times we jump to the kid, but if we skip ourselves, a dysregulated adult can't regulate a kid, I don't think. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you can sometimes, but a dysregulated adult is just going to create more dysregulation mm-hmm. around them. And many of us are dysregulated. Being a person is dysregulating. Like, it, right? Dysregulation happens. And so how do we work through it?
I love that. Maybe you've heard the saying, like, I'm going to share my calm and not my chaos. I mean, again, we're not saying that regulation always looks like calm. It could look like a lot of fun on a trampoline.
For sure.
You know, it doesn't completely equate, but we as caregivers and parents can start to understand ourselves better. And I think it can give us a lot of insight and understanding to our kiddos. So thank you guys so much for this 101. Like I said, there is so much more we could layer on to this conversation. Okay. So as we close, if you're listening and you want a little bit more, then we do have lots of our podcast episodes, not surprising, touch on this idea, because this is a really, really important sort of foundational concept and understanding that we feel like can help you really show up and be present in ways that you want to. But we do have a few other podcast episodes that you might want to go listen to if you want to dive in some more. So you can go listen to podcast episode number 25 and 134 for some more that's specifically about this idea of self-regulation. And then Jesse hinted at the fact that we do have an Empowered to Connect YouTube channel, and we have a specific animated video that talks about this process between external co and self-regulation and explains that. So you can go to the Empowered to Connect YouTube channel and search what is self-regulation? And you can watch that animate or maybe share it with other people that you might be interested in hearing about that. So Jesse and Becca, thank you so much for joining me today. And we hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Empowered to Connect podcast, and we'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, the best way to support us going forward is to subscribe. We'd love to hear from you. Leave a review, drop us a comment, or email us to let us know what you hope to hear in future episodes. Thank you to Kyle Wright, who edits and engineers all of our audio, and Tad Jewett, the creator of our music. On behalf of everyone at ETC, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Empowered to Connect podcast. Until then, we're holding on to hope with you.